All right, so this is our real estate meetup, and we always get together once a month and we talk about long term, short term, midterm. And on this call, in the past, we've always talked about short term. And so I want to make some announcements before we get started. Is first of all, we're going to meet up. We're going to skip December because this particular event would fall on the day after Christmas. So, Lauren, mark your calendar. We're going to skip December altogether. But when we come back in January, it's going to be the third Monday at 12 noon. Now, here's the issue with January. Is the first is actually on a Monday, New Year's Day. And so this call is actually going to be on the 22nd because, and so that ends up being the fourth Monday, because there's five Mondays in January. So it's a weird month because of how the holiday falls for New Year's Day. So for everybody that's listening, mark your calendar. It's going to be January 22nd at 12 noon. And follow the calendar. Just go to kathybenner.com and scroll down to the calendar. You'll see all of our events on the calendar. And it's going to have a brand new Zoom ID as well. So Lauren, you'll want to make a note of that as well. So it's going to be a brand new Zoom ID. And then starting in February, it will officially be the third Monday from then on. And I did check all of the dates. We don't hit any other holidays. And so we're good to go the rest of the year. So it's just that January, of course, when we're getting ready to launch something new. And it's like, well, it's always this except the first one. But anyway. So mark your calendar for January 22nd, and then it will switch over to February 19, and it will go the third Monday after that. And we're going to kind of combine starting in January, and here's why. Every time, and which is why I love that I have Carrie tonight, is that oftentimes when we talk about real estate, especially short term, a lot of folks that get involved with short term, they go, oh, well, like, for example, when COVID came through, a lot of folks with Airbnbs really struggled because they were like travel kind of came to a halt, and a lot of places that people weren't allowed to travel, and they said, what can we do? Especially if they had a mortgage, or if they've got some financial commitments with these properties, they're like, well, what can we do if we're not getting short-term renters? And so when we teach this, and Adam and I, we've had this conversation. Adam is not with us this evening, but he is our mortgage person. And whenever we get together with Adam and we talk about, purchasing some of these real estate properties, we always say, make sure that it's going to float as a long term. Make sure your numbers work as a long term. And then if your intent is to do a short term, that's fine. But if for any reason that you have to pull back and put a long-term renter in there, you're not having to fund the difference because you've got some great big mortgage and you're thinking, oh, with short term, I'm going to be good. My numbers look great. And then when you go on a long-term renter and your rents aren't that high as they are on short term, then all of a sudden you're struggling financially to make those mortgage payments. And then you've got property taxes and everybody that's got the properties, they get all that. So just make sure that your numbers work. Now, here is a formula that is just a very general formula. Of course, there's always exceptions. So the formula is whatever long-term rents are in your area, that's what you want to base your deal on to make sure, again, that you've got room in the deal in case you have to do a long-term renter in there. And then if you decide you want to midterm rent something to like traveling nurses or whatever, they're staying more than 30 days, but not a full year like your long-term renters might. And so you can collect about twice what you would collect on a long-term renter, you're going to get on a midterm. Now, as the rents go up, you're thinking, oh, that sounds good. Well, the work goes up too, because now your guest might only stay 30 days. Or in the case of a traveling nurse, they might stay just for their 13-week assignment and then move on. And so then you have to go in and you have to flip the unit like you would on a short term. So here's what I like to tell folks with midterm rentals. There's really no such thing. Once your tenant is there for 30 days, they are a tenant under tenant laws. And so basically, a midterm rental is a long-term property that you're treating like a short-term guest. A midterm is a long-term property that you're treating like a short-term guest. You're totally furnishing the unit. And now, some folks, they even go to the extent where they supply, the toilet paper, the paper towels, and all of that. like you would on a short term. So it just depends on how long your render is going to be there. So just keep in mind that that midterm, it's kind of a hybrid in there. Okay. It's kind of a hybrid. The laws affect you and your tenant as if they were a long-term renter, but you're treating them like a short-term guest. And oftentimes you're not charging a deposit. You might not, depends. And that's another whole conversation. And then of course you have short-term, and your short-term, again, rule of thumb, is going to be about four times what you would get for a long-term renter, but you're going to have a lot more work. Now you've got to have either you or you've got to pay somebody to go in there and flip that property, every 2 weeks or 3 weeks or what, however long, you know, you might have some minimums that you rent. Some short-term renters, they actually let folks rent by the night, and they're flipping that room every day like a hotel. And so it just depends on where you fit into that whole picture. But I'm here to tell you, and I can't wait to talk with Carrie, because I'm here to tell you there's a million and one ways to make money with real estate. So we want to give you the tools to put in your toolbox so that if you find yourself in a position where you have to make an adjustment and go from short-term to midterm or midterm to long-term or whatever, we just want you to know that the real estate deal itself is always, there's always good, better, and best. There's no bad real estate. And I tell my students all the time, if you think you have a bad deal, wait 5 years. All of a sudden that bad deal looks like a good deal because now, you know, rates are gone up, prices are gone up, everything has gone up. And now all of a sudden what you thought you paid too much for, you're thinking, oh, I did pretty good on that. And so time heals the bad deals and makes them good deals. So there's only good, better, and best when it comes to real estate. You can't go wrong. And the reason that I love real estate is that I can drive by and I can point at it and say, there is $100,000 of my dollars sitting right there, or there is $150,000 of my dollars sitting right there. And I love that. And somebody goes, well, yeah, but it could burn down. Yeah, well, I have insurance. You know, I'm protecting that investment. And so at any time, I can drive by and feel good about my investments. And like I said before, if it's a bad deal, just wait 5 years and time will make that a good deal. So just keep in mind that there's a million and one ways that you can make money in real estate. And don't sweat it like, oh, I should have made a better deal on that. Or how come everybody else is making better deals than I'm making? I don't know how come I can't make a better deal, or I can't get my numbers to work like everybody else's numbers. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's whatever works for you, and it's what cash flow you need. You may not need the same cash flow that somebody else does to have that freedom number that we talk about. You know, once you have so much cash that's coming in off of your real estate and you create that cash flow, and you know what your freedom number is, and your freedom number is simply the amount of cash that you need to make that day job optional, where you don't want to have to punch the time clock. And I made that decision when I was in the beauty salon industry, and I knew that there was no way I could save enough money to retire. And so the only way that I could get enough cash flow to retire is if I did it with real estate. And so I decided to buy my own commercial buildings so that at the end of my 20-year salon career, or 25, however long I decided to stay there, I would have paid for real estate. And that's exactly what I did. So I ended up with 5 paid for buildings, and that was how I was able to retire, is from the cash flow from those buildings. So anyway, it's all good. And so I want to introduce a couple of folks. Number one, I want to introduce Lauren, and she is our short-term specialist, and she's with us. And she is, for those of you that are listening, she is coming to us. Well, first of all, I'm in Columbus, Ohio. I have a condo in Florida. Don't know why I'm not there right now, because it's cold in Columbus, Ohio, but I'm in Columbus, Ohio tonight. And Lauren is, as you can see, I'm in the turtleneck. Lauren's in this great sleeveless top. She's coming to us from Brazil. And she said it's 75, 80 degrees there. And I'm going to let Lauren introduce herself and tell us what she does and what she brings to the table and what she has to offer to this group. So get out your pen and paper and make sure that you take down some notes on how to connect with Lauren. So Lauren, over to you.
Sure. Thanks for the introduction, Kathy. Hi, everyone. Yes, my name is Lauren Coates. I am an Airbnb consultant. I help new vacation rental owners and also current owners that want to make more money come up with a really powerful strategy, marketing strategy, perhaps social media, with copywriting, with data research, business planning, all the foundational things to ensure that your rental is always going to be full and you're going to be comfortable with the guests that come in. So I think we'll put my link as well in the notes, but it's laurencoates.com. I also have a Calendly, and I also have a book and a course and a few other things that I can help if you're a beginner.
And make sure that you write her name down, because if you just Google Lauren Coates, there's more than one. So make sure that you spell her name correctly, Lauren Coates, and put in the .com, and her site will come right up. So yes, feel free to put that over in the chat as well, Lauren. Yes, thank you.
Okay.
So now we're going to talk with Carrie, and I met Carrie through a friend. We went to an actual real estate summit. It's the big one here in Ohio, Tri-County or Tri-State, I guess. And so I met her there, and she was doing something called shared housing. And I was like, what? Because of course I know there's a million and one ways to make money with real estate. And I thought, you know what? Our group needs to hear this, because if you have that property that's just not working as a short term for whatever reason, maybe your plan was to go short term, but maybe the location's not quite perfect, or maybe your numbers don't quite work. But for whatever reason, if you have to make a segue, this is just going to be another tool in your tool belt. So, with that, I want to talk to Carrie and say, Carrie, tell us a little bit, first of all, where you're coming to us from, and how did you actually get into real estate investing? What's your backstory?
Sure. So my name is Carrie Traxler, and I am coming from Twin Cities, Minnesota. And I want to reiterate what you said in that time really does heal bad buys. So I knew since I was a young child that I wanted to become a real estate investor. I just wasn't sure how I was going to do that. I knew it was going to take some money. And so in 2003, I bought my first property. And I don't regret that I jumped in at the peak of the market, because I would rather jump in high than have never have jumped in at all. And so I bought a 4-bed, 2-bath home. And at the time, I was working full time and also going to school full time.
Oh,
And so
wow.
I was making $10 an hour. I wasn't making a lot of money. I really actually couldn't afford the house I was purchasing. I was financing it 100%, but I knew that one way or another, I would make that mortgage payment. And so my plan at the time was to find people to rent the other bedrooms. And back then, it really wasn't a thing. So I would list an ad in the newspaper. I would pay $32 a week to run an ad. And for the first few years, I really didn't treat it as a business. I just saw it as a way to make my mortgage payment and really get my foot in the door in that first property. Because in order to be an investor, I was going to need at least one. And so,
Now you're living in the property and you're just renting out bedrooms.
yep. So I actually lived in every single bedroom in that property, because what I came to realize is that the bigger the bedroom, the more money I could get for it. So I started out in a better bedroom, and then I moved to a different one. And by the time it ended, I was living in like basically what would be considered like the baby nursery. Because that way I could get the most money for the other bedrooms. And so basically, I was paying about $50 a month to own this house. And so I realized that this was an opportunity to do this on a bigger scale. And so in 2007, I was actually standing at a crossroads. All throughout my time at school, whenever I took an aptitude test, it always said I should either become an entrepreneur or a lawyer. So in 2007, I had an almost full ride scholarship to law school. At the same time that I found my first community shared house to purchase. And so I knew I couldn't do both. And so it really was a choice of what did I want my life to look like? And ultimately, I decided that despite my parents' best efforts to talk me into law school, that I really wanted to pursue real estate investing. So I bought my first like investment property on a short sale. I still actually bought it higher. I mean, the market had not fallen all the way yet. So while I felt like I got a really great deal on it, at one point I decided I was kind of tired of being a landlord and all the headaches and I wanted out. And at that point I couldn't get out. This was maybe 2012. I was not necessarily upside down, but I couldn't sell.
Okay,
There wasn't.
because for those of you that are listening, and if you've not been in the real estate game, and you may have kind of missed this, although it was all over the news at the time, but the market started to fall apart, if you will, in 08, 09, in that range. And so Carrie was into this property and she bought it at the height of the market when properties were just going higher and higher and higher, and appraisers were appraising and lenders were lending, and everybody kept saying they're creating this bubble and at some point it's going to break. And so what happened in 08 and 09, that bubble did break. And so now the bank said we need to reevaluate everything, and everything came down thousands of dollars. But you might have borrowed up here and now your property was worth down here. And so that's why, for those of you that maybe remember going through this, we saw foreclosures clear across the country because a lot of folks decided that that was going to be their best financial plan, was to simply walk away from a house that they basically overpaid for at the time. And that was their plan, was to just, because a lot of folks, their job didn't change. Their mortgage didn't change. Everything's the same as it was when they bought the property. Now, some folks did lose their jobs, and I get that. That's what the whole foreclosure process is there to protect folks that have had major life changes that's beyond their control. But there was a ton of folks during that time that they made the decision to make that their financial plan. They just were going to walk away, knowing that if they filed bankruptcy and walked away from those mortgages, that in 2 or 3 or 4 years, they would be eligible to get another mortgage. And their plan was then to get one down here, a little after the crash. So, anyway, Carrie, you weren't upside down, but your property was not valued at what it was when you bought it.
Yes, and I at that time had also was had done a flip that had not gone well. So there we were sitting on a lot of just difficult times at the time. But I'm so glad now in hindsight, one of the greatest blessings was that I couldn't sell that community house. And so and part of what I needed to learn too was how to run a business. Because when I first bought that shared house. I converted my the first home into a long-term rental. In hindsight, I would have been a lot better off just leaving that by the bedroom. But so I had bought this 6-bed, 3-bath home, and I financed it 100%. In fact, they gave me a very small amount of money back at the closing table. But I was very over-leveraged at the time, so I was kind of buying this with no funds. And again, kind of just on a prayer that I hope I can get these renovations done. I hope people will continue to rent these bedrooms. This is a lot to rent at once. So I had just met my ex-husband at the time. And so for the 17 days following the closing, we both worked full-time jobs. And then we were renovating this property,
Wow.
till the middle of the night, weekend, doing side jobs on top of it to make extra income. And so I converted this at the time it became 7 bedrooms, and I lived there for a while. And while I was living in it, it was very different managing it than a year later when I decided to move out and start a home with my ex-husband. And so learning how to manage the property was like another jump on just what it takes to, it's different when you're not there every day to sort of handle things. And so I would say I spent a lot of years just sort of figuring things out, making doing failing forward, making a lot of mistakes, and just trying not to make the same one twice. And
And that's okay. And again, it's what I said before, is that a lot of times time is your friend. it makes a bad deal good. And sometimes you just have to hang in there, roll up your sleeves and hang in there and wait until, you know, the market starts to go back up. Because again, you're making money by appreciation. You know, your mortgage is coming down. The value of your property is going up. We all know that rents are going up, whether long-term, mid-term, short-term, doesn't matter. Rents are automatically going up with whatever the cost of inflation is every year. And so at some point, you're going to have more and more of a margin there. You know, it's just going to keep getting better and better and better as the years go by.
Yep. And in this case, when I was first renting out bedrooms, you know, I was renting them for an average of, I would say, $400.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, typically they rent around 750 is a pretty much an average, so almost double. And so that, you know, that does help significantly. In the meantime, I also converted more rooms in the home to bedrooms. So that was something I wished I had done sooner, was to just look around and say, what is unused space that I can convert to bedrooms? So that ultimately that six bedroom ended up to be currently today. Now it's a nine bedroom.
Wow, 6 to 9. Okay. So you found three more bedrooms in that house.
I did.
They used to add three more bedrooms. That's incredible.
Yeah. So, I mean, something as simple as when I was looking at, you know, how do I increase my cash flow? My first thought was, how do I buy another property? But then I looked at, okay, well, what could I do with what I already have first to really maximize my cash flow? And then once I get that maximized, all right, now I can look at how do I acquire the next one? Mm-hmm. In 2020, when COVID first hit, the market got kind of funny there for a second. Mm-hmm. And everything just sort of froze. And it was during that time that I then found my next shared house. And that one started out as a seven bedroom that I have since turned into a 10 bedroom. But I was really running into the market when everybody else was running out. After the fact, after I purchased that property, I had so many people say to me, you know, I never saw it on the market, or, you know, I would have bought that. That was such a great deal. And it had been on the market, even when I looked at it, for 52 days. So it wasn't like, you know,
it wasn't hiding.
No, it was definitely not hiding. And so, yeah, that's how I got my start. It was really a dream that I didn't know how I was going to make happen, other than, I did read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was very inspiring to me. It was about 6 months later that I bought my first house. And it really just came down to a mindset of, I'm going to make this happen no matter what it takes. And I'm going to do it scared. So.
No, as we all probably did. I know I did. I get that. I so get that. But I'm going to back up even more. What made you decide, even before you read the book, what made you decide that real estate was the deal for you? For me, it was because I was 40 years old and my aha moment came. And I see Trish is in the audience, and Trish knows me personally. So she probably already knows the story. But my mom came to me at the time and she said, you better get on with it. And I thought, get on with it? What are you talking about? And she said, you only have about 20 years before retirement. And she said, and there's going to come a time that you're not going to be able to, you know, work 10-hour days like you're doing now. And she said, what are you going to live on? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I'm still just worried about paying the rent. And she goes, but you have to plan, or it's going to, you know, 60 is going to come before you know it. And how are you going to do it? So when I looked at my budget and my time and my skill set, I thought the only way that I can create cash flow without working for it by the hour, you know, like picking up yet another minimum wage job, is to get into real estate. And so my decision, being in the beauty salon industry, was to buy my own beauty salon building. And so for the next 20 years, from 40 to 60, I was going to let my staff basically buy me a piece of real estate. And then when I retired and the building was paid off, then that money would then be my income. And that's exactly what I did. And it worked so well that I then leveraged the first building and got the second one, and I leveraged the first two and got the third one, and et cetera, et cetera. And I ended up retiring with five paid for buildings. So, but I had to make a decision. that that was the only way I was going to make it. What was your thinking to even get into real estate? What made you decide that that was the thing?
I don't know if I actually know that part of my why. It's been so long a part of me that that was what I wanted to do. I do know my parents, growing up, I remember working on our very first rental. They couldn't afford to buy it on their own, so they bought this just hole in the wall trailer with another couple so that everybody got their start together. And I remember ripping down wallpaper in that trailer. And growing up, I heard all the rental horror stories of our tenants and the problems, so it didn't scare me in any way. But I don't know, it wasn't necessarily about a retirement. Because even now, I think I would still, like, if you handed me enough money in the world, I would still do this. So it's not about a dollar amount. But I couldn't give you like an exact reason why, other than just it was something as a kid I knew I wanted to do. I didn't see it going this way. I didn't start out like, oh, I think I'll get into shared housing. I just knew I wanted to be an investor.
So again, when you bought your first property, you weren't thinking shared housing at that time.
No, I was literally just, how do I make mortgage payment every month? So I still have the budget going back. Every paycheck I got was color-coded, and my bills were color-coded. So at the end of each month, I might have 30 some dollars left over. I mean, I was down to the penny my budget was. And so it was very much just, how do I make my mortgage every month? That's how this started.
I remember those days. I do. I do. I remember those days. Wow, that's crazy. So once you got there and now you're just trying to make your payment, did you worry about zoning at all? Was that an issue, or were you just renting it out by the room, just making the mortgage and didn't worry about that until maybe when you bought your second one? Was
Yeah,
that ever
so
an issue?
in my 4-bedroom one, it wasn't an issue, because as far as like an unrelated person's ordinance, 4 bedrooms, 4 people. So that wasn't an issue. So I was never worried about zoning. When I bought that first shared house, I wouldn't say I was worried about it, but I always knew that it existed. And it was kind of one of those like, well, it's not a problem till it's a problem. And so now that one I've owned since 2007. And so far I have not run into any zoning issues there. I did run into some zoning issues on my second one. And that was the result of a complaint from the next door neighbors that I purchased the home from, Three Sisters. And so I'm still kind of working things out through that. I'm hoping to continue to make it work as a by the bedroom transitional home. But at the end of the day, there might come a day where I have to shift into some other type of setting, just to, if they're not going to allow it to continue the way it is.
Have you checked the zoning there
I
or
have.
no? Okay.
Yes, I have.
Okay.
So, I mean, some of, I've always had, I did the same thing. The goal is, you want to maximize your cash flow, but you have to plan for a worst case scenario. So there was always a time where I knew, like, if I needed to go to a long-term rental, maybe transition it to a sober living home, there was other options. I don't want to change it, but at the end of the day, I have some plan B, C, D options
And
to
your
consider.
numbers work, which is what we were talking about at the beginning. Is your numbers work if you had to segue into something different?
Yes, so I did do a cash out refi. So my numbers would have worked a lot better without that cash out refi. And that's one thing. In hindsight, you were talking about you leverage your first one, you leverage your second one. One of the things that I wish I had done differently throughout this is really, instead of taking those funds over the last 20 years and sort of living at the same time, would be to have let that money go back into the property and have left it in the property. So that at year 30, at year 25, it's paid off, or just
Okay.
as opposed to, you know what, not that I wanted to stay working longer, but just maybe if I hadn't jumped quite so early.
I get it. I get it.
So I'm grateful now. I definitely took it, the most over-leveraged hard way possible. But, people had told me at the beginning, like, oh, well, you should really be pouring all those funds back into the property. And also, I used to think, like, why would anyone have reserves? That seemed crazy to me. That's money you could be investing. And so, that's a lesson I guess I just learned over time, the importance of having a safety net. And you run your business differently when you have reserves or when you have that safety net. So
Well,
another
and
lesson I had to learn.
the stress level is totally different too when you've got those reserves in
Yes.
place. Yeah, when you don't have the reserves in place and you're thinking that you need a new roof or you need a new furnace or you need some big maintenance issue is about to happen. You start to sweat bullets a little bit there, thinking of, oh, what am I going to do? And so,
Or
yeah.
even bringing in tenants that aren't necessarily ideal tenants because you'd really like that cash flow. And then it turns out you should have not brought those tenants in and waited for the right ones.
So that's the next thing I want to talk about. Tell us about your tenants. What is it that you do? This is where it gets interesting. So pay attention, folks. Tell us what you do. How do you get your tenants? Who are they? How do you, how does that work? Tell us about that.
Sure. So it didn't start out this way, but this is sort of what it's morphed into over time, the culture that the properties have built. But so I rent to men who are in a state of transition. So whether that's having moved to the area for their job, divorced, breakup, maybe have come out of drug and alcohol treatment. Many of them often have felonies, whether they're I mean, some of them could have been not even that recent, but they have a felony history. And so they have a very difficult time finding housing. And so it's really, I call it transitional housing because oftentimes they're not really in the place, their final destination. And so it's an opportunity to really get back on their feet and have affordable housing, but then also live within the community of other men. And that's really what the houses become is a community of people who help each other out, whether it's with food or jobs or just advice. And so it's been really amazing to get to be a part of their journey. And I get to know all of the tenants personally and know their backstory. And really just get to be a part of their lives.
Now, is there some government funding in some cases that help pay their rent, or are they all totally on their own? And how do you vet them as far as their income and that sort of thing?
Yep, so it's all private pay. I don't do anything through government funding.
Okay.
And then as far as vetting them, I'm really looking at where are they headed, not necessarily where have they been. So I want to know. At minimum, they need to have employment. Ideally, something that they didn't start yesterday. But so, and then I'm looking at can they, I do collect a security deposit. And
Okay.
then oftentimes when they're moving in, they're usually moving in almost immediately or, within a handful of days. Most of the time, they're not moving in with a lot of stuff. So I do furnish the bedrooms. And so they're usually bringing like their clothes and their personal belongings. But I want to make sure that they can at least meet the monthly rent, and that they can pay the security deposit and a prorated rent upfront when they're moving in.
Now, how do you find your tenants, or how did they find you?
Sure. So I no longer run newspaper ads. The ideal tenant comes from Craigslist.
Okay.
But now I've found over the years that, especially the last few years, I don't get as many calls off of my Craigslist ads. But when I do, that's usually the right tenant. It's just they're fewer and farther between. And so I will run place listings on Facebook Marketplace.
Okay.
but I have to weed through a lot of people to find that right person. And so it's a little bit of a struggle. I think if I would have tried to do that right from the get-go, I don't know if I would have known what to weed out. And so I'm grateful for the experience now to just be able to understand, like, okay, this is, I'm looking for the right fit for the house.
Yeah. And you've done it long enough that you know kind of when somebody's going to fit in.
Yep. And so I actually ask them to leave me a voicemail. And at this point, I can listen to the voicemail and tell you from the voicemail if they're going to move in or not. Just because there are so many cues about what they say, how they say it, the tone, the questions that are almost all of the answers are right there in that voicemail.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I totally get what you're saying. And for those of you that are in the audience that don't get it, that's experience. That is nothing more than experience. Once you have some experience under your belt, you'll understand that statement that she can tell by the voicemail whether they're going to be a good fit or not. And I too, I do somewhat. It's kind of a hybrid. I run a guest house, and so it's a short-term rental, but I do it by the room. I don't rent the whole house like a lot of Airbnbs where they rent the whole house. I actually rent out by the room. And so, like you, I have different folks that are calling me wanting a room for a couple of nights or a weekend or a week or whatever, and I can kind of tell as well. Yeah, so I get that. Now, how do you work it when you've got, because you said what, your one house now has 7 rooms?
One has 9 and one has 10.
Okay, 9 and 10. How do you handle the common areas? I could
Yes.
see where that would be a problem. Like, you always have those that never do the dishes, then you have those that kind of overstep their obligations, and then you've got everything in between. How do you handle that?
Yes. So, in both the 9 and the 10 bedroom, it's like two houses stacked on top of each other. So there's two kitchens, two laundries. So it's almost more like 5 and 5, just so we're clear
Okay.
on what they're sharing. So, but this is really where it comes down to communicating expectations, and also setting everybody up for success. So for instance, in the kitchens, everybody has a designated cabinet.
Okay.
Just that way, they know where their food is. There's no question whose food it is. I furnish the kitchens with the basics like plates, cups, silverware, pots and pans. And so, yeah, there is a balancing act when it comes to cleanliness. And so, I'm relaying the expectation that when you make food, you wash the dishes right away. They also sort of self-police within.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm getting calls saying so and so is not doing their dishes. They find a way to work it out. And that's my preference, is that you try to work it out first. And I'm sort of your last resort when there's a problem that you can't handle on your own.
That's interesting because there's always that one that what we've realized, 'cause and now again, I have to back up and say this. I had beauty salons and I had 5 of them. And it's very similar to what Carrie is talking about because I would have maybe 12 stylists all working in one salon, and we would have the dispensary, and every girl would get her own cupboard to keep all of her own hair color and everything in. But there was always one that seemed to want to dip into somebody else's cupboard. She was the one that would never do her towels. She was the one that would that would leave her color bowls in the sink. There was always one all the time. There was just always one. And if that one happened to move on, I couldn't relax for very long because then as we like to say in our world, another one would rise to the top and become the one again. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Well, and that's one of the things I'm looking for is, are you going to fit within the culture of the house? And so
Yeah.
it's not just about renting a bedroom. It's also about looking for someone that's going to be a good fit. And they may not, I usually tell them when they move in, you either love it or you hate it. Like this kind of living is not for everybody.
Right.
And the ones who love it, they do really love it. They don't want to leave. Which does go into, there comes a point where they need to leave. Because after a while, people start to maybe get a little entitled. And so
Okay.
I would say, the average tenant probably stays 9 months to a year. But
Okay.
by the time they're at about the 2 year mark, that's about the time where it's like, it's just probably time to move on. And for some new people to have this opportunity, you've had some time to live in a what I would call affordable housing and really get on your feet and figure out what you're going to do and where you're going to go next.
Yeah, I get that. So yeah, now how about entrance and locking of doors and does everyone's room have a key lock or is it a keyless entry? What did you just what do you decide that works best for that particular environment?
If I was going to do it over again, I probably would look at something like the digital locks. But
Okay.
when I started again, this was 20 years ago. So, you do what works. And so I had used just basic keyed locks.
Okay.
Oftentimes I buy like the Atlas brand for Menards.
Okay.
But that works. There are times where a tenant will lock themselves out, and that's just annoying, especially because I don't live at the property. But
Oh, I get it.
I do have a handyman who lives at one of my properties, so he generally keeps the keys. But if he's at work, someone's got to go let them in. And so at some point, I might consider switching over to digital locks. I haven't done that plunge yet, but it'd be an option. And then the front doors and back doors are always left unlocked, so I have locks on them. It's just, you have a bunch of men living in the house. They don't really care. Their bedroom doors are locked. But, it would not be good if someone broke into the house because they're not going to like what they find. So there's really no concerns as far as the men are concerned that someone's going to come in and break in the house. So.
So these guys are, and again, it's all guys, right? You rent strictly to guys, so they're all
And it's
there.
not that I haven't rented to women. Few and far between, a woman will move into the house. But I would say at this point, now that it's become all men, it's very rare that a woman would move into this house.
And so what is a day look like? I mean, are they all coming and going at different hours, different jobs, different shifts?
They are. In fact, I was just this last week, I stopped at one of the houses, and one of the tenants said to me, one of the newest guys is like, "Is it always this quiet?" Like, because they really are. They're just coming and going to their jobs. And so oftentimes, there might only be one or two people home at any given time, just because they're all on such different shifts.
I love it. I love it. Rhonda made a comment in the chat. She said a former boss told her years ago that if she was in real estate, she would rent to men going through divorce or transition. She said, I thought that could work. And she says now she has a confirmation that it does work. It can work. And then when we were talking about how one rises to the top, she said, yeah, there's always going to be one that does that. Hey, if you have any questions for Carrie, put it in the chat or comments. I'd love for you to share what your thoughts are on this conversation for those of you that are listening. And my next question is, you said you furnish the rooms for the guys because they come just with their clothing and some personal items. Where do you buy your stuff? Do you have a go-to, like do you get everything from IKEA or everything from Amazon or is it a more complicated than that?
It's actually less complicated than that. I love picking up stuff off the side of the road. That is my absolute favorite. My kids, anytime I see something from a block away on the side of the road, they're like, "No, Mom, we don't need anything else." I was like, "One of you is gonna have to move over. We gotta lay seats down." So oftentimes, especially dressers, even beds, I will find for free or very cheap on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. I do put mattress covers on the mattresses.
Okay.
And then as far as sheets, I usually buy those at, think I got them all this time at, I think Walmart, and then or maybe
Okay.
Target. And then I did all of my comforters from Target as well. I, caught them on a great sale where I felt like they were practically giving them away. But they don't need to be, it doesn't need to be expensive. Most of the time, they're literally, in my case, my tenants are just so grateful for a bed to sleep in. So it's a very different clientele than your Airbnb people. They're not looking at thread counts and, that sort of stuff. The sheets are clean and they're grateful for a bed.
Now, do they do their own laundry and sheets and all of that once they move in? I mean,
They
you're
do,
not
yeah.
going in and changing sheets once a week or.
No, they're at this point, once they've moved in, they're 100% on their own until they move out. And then at that point, I will get the room cleaned up and ready to rent again.
This has been a great conversation. Lauren, how about you? Do you have some questions for Carrie or comments or thoughts? Is this something that you've seen or heard before?
Yeah, I'm finding this super fascinating because I actually did the same thing. I had a communal home, my personal home in Hollywood, and we had a back house, 3 bedrooms, and I had 2 RVs going, and I was renting to creatives. So I had my Airbnb business I was running, but at my personal home, I was kind of doing the same thing. And I can just say so many similarities. I can just tell by the voice note. I also used Craigslist and got those fantastic leads just from, hearing their voice. So there is always that one, I can say. And it's always so a delicate balance to find that right fit. I did want to say, after many dramas of cleaning and these dishes and that dog poop, and because I was also pet friendly, people were complaining about each other's dogs. What I did was I made zones. So one person was responsible for this zone. One person was doing the gardening and the front patio. The other person, there was always one that wanted to do the bathroom, which I was like, that's fine, you can do the bathroom. But then I knew whose responsibility it was. So there was no chore wheel. It was kind of like I knew who to consult. I did want to ask Carrie, does she bring a cleaner in to common areas every so often? Because I know deep cleaning can be something that, especially maybe men in transition, are, don't see.
So I would say maybe once a year or twice a year, my boys and I will go in and clean. I would like to get to the point where I bring in a cleaner, even if it's quarterly, just to do bathrooms and kitchens. I think that'd be helpful, but for now it's free if my boys and I go. So that's something where,
I get it.
it's good for them too, they kind of complain the whole time, like, why don't these guys clean up after themselves? But it's good to see both sides of real estate investing, not just the checks that come in, but also the work that goes in behind it. So.
Yeah. I do another similar house hacking in the fact that the salon that I was in for 25 years, I had rented it out by the suite as a booth rent salon. So the girls would just rent a chair, and it was a house that was converted. And so we kept it a house. We kept the rooms, and I could put like 2 hairstylists together in one room, and they would share a suite. And that worked out really well. And then once I retired, and so the girls, some of them wanted to stay, and a couple of them wanted to have their own salon. And so anyhow, the long and the short of it is I still rent that building out by the suite.
Wow.
And what I did is I just hired a cleaning gal, and she comes in once a month to do the lobby, the staircase, and the bathroom. And then everybody's responsible for their own suite. And that works really well. And then she also can give me a little heads up if she sees something that needs attention. And because she's in there once a month. And so that works really well for me. And it's not hugely expensive. I think she charges me like $30 an hour to clean, and she's there maybe 3 hours, and it's once a month, so less than $100 a month.
Yeah, well, and even in the kitchens, most of these guys don't necessarily cook. So a lot of times they're eating out, they're microwaving meals. So there's, in the kitchens, I'd say there's really not a lot happening. It could still use a wipe down, every once in a while, or, someone to take a broom to it. But yeah, they actually do a really great job of keeping the house up.
Yeah, well, I liked my gal so well that I now have her come to my personal house that I'm renting out by the room as a guest house. And as a matter of fact, she was here today, and she deep cleans once a month here for me. And she does like the fans, you know, it's all the stuff that I don't do in between guests every single time. And she does like baseboards and the fans and in back behind the dressers and the desk. And, you know, she pulls everything out and kind of does a deep clean once a month. And it just really makes a difference on how things look. And so I had some girlfriends that came by 1 year at Christmas time. And the one finally asked me, she goes, "How do you keep your house so clean?" And I said, "I have a girl." I have a girl that comes in once a month. And she was like, "Oh, that's your secret." And it's just enough that it makes a difference. And it makes life a little easier for me. So, anyone over in the chat have any questions for Carrie? I just know some of you have to have some questions because this is such a great tool to put in your toolbox of something that if you needed to fill some space to pay those mortgages.
Well, and
So.
another thing too, just to kind of talk about shared housing, there's a lot of variations in shared housing. So I'm just doing one very specific piece of it. There are some people who one of the easiest ways into shared housing is to find an organization that is, they guarantee the bedroom rent, but then they fill your bedrooms. And so, in that sense, you're basically just master leasing your home out to another organization where they're in charge of sort of the day-to-day side of the tenants. So that's one option, or you can take it all the way to the other side of, a residential assisted living, where you're really getting into regulations and a very active income versus a passive income. So there's a wide range of what
A
they
million
would
and
call
one
shared
ways.
housing. There really is, yes.
I know, and again, I have a lot of long-term rentals, and next door to my fourplex is an actual VA house for vets, and it's a shared housing situation, exactly what you're doing. But the owner of that house gets a government grant of X amount of dollars per bedroom. Per vet that he allows to live there. And the only other thing is that some of them have some health issues, which is why they're not able to work or whatever. That's why the Veterans Administration is paying for their room for them to stay there. And so the only other thing that he realized is that he could get approved and he could then get additional grant money if he transported them to their doctor visits. And so he just does the housing and the transportation, and then the Veterans Administration does the rest. Trish says, "What is the average amount of time your tenants stay, Carrie?"
Yeah, so I would say pretty typically would an average would be 9 months. I did have one tenant who stayed 10 years. They, if it's a really good fit, usually it could be looking at 2 or 3 years. And then I might get a some that stay 3 months. Either it's not a good fit, or it might be more of a contract. Maybe they're on a construction type of traveling work. I do get a little bit of traveling, say nurses, but not as much. I don't feel like my house is really catering towards that crowd. So yeah, 9 months would be a pretty typical stay.
And so you could, because as you're doing it furnished, they're not signing a year's lease, you could call yourself a midterm. Call it a midterm rental.
Yeah, I would say it is a midterm rental.
And I bought a condo and turned it into strictly a midterm rental. It's just a little one bedroom condo, and I have a waiting list of folks that want that little condo.
Wow,
So
that's
there is a
fantastic.
market. Yeah, there is a market there for the midterm. But again, I bought it right in the heart of Columbus, and you know, we're surrounded by like five major hospitals. Within 20 minutes of the condo. And so it's real easy to pick up those traveling medical professionals there. And it's quiet because they're, again, they're not sharing with anybody else. It's not shared housing. They get to rent the entire one bedroom. And so I can double the rent over what I would get for a long-term renter there. I can get about twice as much. And that particular condo complex, it's in the HOA rules that they do not want me to short-term rent it because then I could get like four times the rent. But because I can't short-term rent it, They said it has to be at least 30 days or more, which is perfect for the traveling medical professional. And so I can get twice the rent that I would get from a long term. So yeah, so that's working out really well for me. So it's cash flowing really well, and my tenants are basically buying me a condo.
That's awesome. And I, as far as like the lease terms go, I run everything on a month-to-month lease. So okay. That way, if it's not a good fit, I can give them 30 days notice to move out. Or, you know, if they're ready to transition into whatever their next is, then they give me 30 days to move out.
Yeah, that's perfect. I love it. Carrie, you have found quite the niche for yourself there. I love that. Any other comments or questions from our guests?
Oh, yeah. If anyone pops up, let me know. I have a few questions. Do you rent from age 20 to 60, or do you find the average to be like 40? Do 20-year-olds get along with 55-year-olds? How does that work?
So I do have, I think my youngest tenant is probably 23. And generally my younger tenants struggle. So it's good that there's other older people in the house to really take them under their wing, because they have a lot to learn. And so I would say the average age of tenants is usually more like 30 to 50.
Okay.
Okay. How do you de-escalate issues, or has that ever been something you've had to do?
It is. There are a handful of times where I legit felt like a hostage negotiator. I like to think I'm actually really good at handling crises, especially with like talking a tenant off a cliff or a ledge. I've had a few encounters that, you know, sort of get your heart racing. Where you're like, whew, can't believe that went the way it did. It went well. But I think really it's about it. It's also coming from a place of compassion. And I've had to kick tenants out of the house who are just raging upset in that moment. But I'm also coming from a place of compassion while doing it. Mm-hmm. And so I've also had to be creative in problem solving. So as a form of cash for keys, sometimes I buy them a plane ticket or a bus ticket, or, just find creative ways. It's like, what's your problem that you need help with to move on from here? Let me help you with that then. It used to really bother me to reward bad behavior. And now I've come to realize it's the best possible way for everybody to move on quickly.
That's amazing.
And it does make an impression on them. They will remember that's huge. I don't know how, with all the folks that are in the audience, I don't know where you are in energy work or, you know, and as we say, sending you good vibes or whatever. But when you treat one of your tenants that way, with that kind of compassion, it helps change who they are.
Mm-hmm. And it helps change you too.
Yeah. And so that's huge. That's huge. Yeah. So, wow. That's very enlightening to hear that is how you solve some of those issues. I love that. Yeah. That's good.
Do you have a list of rules that you've created, house rules?
I do. I didn't create it till about 2020, because I thought they were common sense. And so we used to just talk about common sense rules. And one day I realized it was just the same stuff over and over that were the problems. So as part of my lease, I have a one page sort of common sense expectations that they initial next to each line that they've read.
Give us some examples, Carrie.
Only flush toilet paper down the toilet would be one. I had to replace a sewer pipe from somebody's, you know, makeup wipes. I guess it would like reasonable expectations as far as keeping your stuff out of the common areas, or washing your dishes, or trying to work things out among yourselves first before calling me. And that definitely seems to help. And I'm very direct with the tenants. So they never have to question, like, did I mean what I said? Or am I really trying to say what I said? Like, I speak to them and just, I mean what I say and I say what I mean. So, you know, they really appreciate just the direct, open line of communication and building that trust basically immediately with them.
Yeah. Because they can
That's
count
great.
on you. Yeah, they can count on you to mean what you say. Yeah, they can count on that. Yeah, I like that.
I can definitely recommend from my experience anyone who's going to follow this route of community housing to present those rules and expectations immediately if you need to Google, if you need to just make up something. But I can't tell you how many times someone was like, "Well, I didn't know, there were quiet hours." And I was like, "Well, usually people sleep at night, like so it's good, just I would say just, be extra, because I always make this joke with my friends. Like, over the years, my contracts doubled in size annually, because I just discovered what other people don't, also carry. Yeah, just exactly. You think, do you even call it common sense
I say it.
expectations?
I don't put it on the page, but I let them
Okay.
know these are common sense expectations. And they usually laugh because they're
Yeah.
like, oh, yeah, duh, these are very common sense.
Yeah. I love to articulate them. After all those experiences, I can't wait to talk to you about my, house rules.
I love it. I love it. Any other comments, questions? This has been a great conversation. Carrie, thank you so much for being with us. This has been very enlightening. Rhonda says, I love Carrie's compassionate approach and the adult daycare expectation rules. I love that. Yes, Rhonda, I agree. I agree. This has been great. And so pay attention. You can get in touch with me, just kathybenner.com. You see my name there in my little Hollywood square. And just kathybenner.com, and you'll find our, if you go down my homepage, you'll find our calendar, and on the calendar, just follow the calendar to click through on whatever topic you want to listen to, and it'll tell you how to get into the call. So it'll give the link. So that's the best way to find us. And Lauren put already input into the chat how to get in touch with her. And if I scroll up there, she is at laurencoates.com. And again, there's more than one Lauren Coates on the internet. So if you just Google Lauren Coates, you're like, I can't find her. So make sure you just put in the www.laurencoates.com. And then she has a Calendly link there where if you want to chat with her, make a note of that. You can either go to the three little dots next to where she typed that. And well, it may not let you if it's under host and panelists. I don't think it'll let you. You might have to make a screen print. I know if depending on how the call is set up, sometimes you can make a copy there. But you might have to just make a screen print on your computer or on your phone. Just take a screen print so you can see her Calendly link. And then how can folks get in touch with you, Carrie?
Sure. So I actually just added the website to the chat.
I see
So
it.
I'm in the process of putting together a course on shared housing.
Oh,
So
good.
if you go to the website, you can subscribe so that when the courses launch, you'll get a notification. And then so that's www.sharedhousingblueprint.com.
I love it.
Otherwise, you can reach me. I'll put my cell phone and my email in the chat as well.
Perfect. And again, for those of you that are listening, once you scroll down to see her website and her information, you can just make a screen print if you don't want to get out your ink pen and try to jot it down that quick. And this is being recorded. I'm going to put the recording in the Kathy Benner International Academy, that you can find that also at kathybenner.com. So you can go back and listen to the recording if you want. And all of this contact information for myself and for Lauren and for Carrie will be with there with the recording. So feel free to go back and listen to the replay, and all of our contact information will be there as well. So thank you so much. Lauren, I appreciate you as always. Thank you for being on. And Carrie, thank you. And our audience may not know this, but I will be sending all the links over to Carrie on this replay. And Carrie, feel free to use it however you wish. If you can use any part or piece of this recording for any marketing for yourself, you are welcome to do that.
Well, thank you. And thanks for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. I'm so happy that everyone is here this evening, and we will see everyone next time. But remember, no meetup in December. Then we're back in January. Follow the calendar. We'll see you then. Bye, everyone.